If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
That is what I'm talking about. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bill Carnes right here on 2A Radio. I want to thank RJ Hinder for yet another awesome show and sending his audience off to join us right here on 2A Radio. I've got to tell you, I sat in for Dave Champion yesterday. The plan is to sit in for him again today and again tomorrow while he's off getting some really cool modifications done to his new truck. Out in California, so he's not able to do the show. That's 3 o'clock Central Time here on RBN, Monday through Friday. I spent time on his show complaining about my ails with my hand and all this other good stuff, and one of the callers called up and gave me some ideas on what to do about it. So I did that, and my hand's actually feeling quite a bit better. It looks pretty ugly. It actually looks like a damned Halloween prop, all the different injury to it, but it is feeling better. Certainly not anywhere near 100%. I'd say my hand is about 7% useful, 93% useless. Yesterday, it was 1% useful and 99% useless. So we are well on our way to recovery. And that's what we're doing. As a matter of fact, Quince sent me an email about some ideas yesterday as well. Thank you very much, Quince. I appreciate that. So anyhow, I am trying to get over all of this. I was supposed to go this coming weekend and shoot for the Handgun Combat Master certification, something I've been chasing for a few years, but I have a feeling that I'm going to be in absolutely no condition to be able to try that. So yesterday on the show, I was speaking a little bit about transitioning using your support hand. And I had a couple people say, hey, would you talk a little bit more about that? Well, sure I will. As a matter of fact, because of this, we're planning the 2A Radio 3-day handgun course. It's all defensive handgun work. It's going to be March 19, 20, 21, 2010. March 19th, 20th, and 21st of 2010. So coming up in about 4 months. With that being said, once that course is done, it's going to be time to come up with another course. So I was planning on doing a rifle course. After that, I just may very well do a transition course where you're going to be shooting transitional hands, one-handed with your firing side hand, one-handed with your support hand, and even transitioning back and forth. I very well may just do that, because that seems like a pretty important skill set that people are going to need. I've been dry practicing a little bit with my left hand. And the thing is if I actually, in the next week or so, while my hand's out of commission, who knows how long it's going to be out of commission, if I actually have to shoot with my left hand, I'm going to have to do it without any support from my right hand. It's not going to be a two-handed shooting, it'll be one-handed. Because my right hand, even with just dry practicing with that, is such a huge pain distraction, it's ridiculous. So shooting with just one hand gives you a completely different stance, oftentimes gives you a cant in the gun. There's all kinds of stuff about it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that in the next segment. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Two-A Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. So we'll talk a little bit about support hand shooting. Really, the stance changes a bit. Generally speaking, there's two very common shooting stances out there. One's the Weaver stance, where your firing side is actually dropped back. It's like a normal finding stance, right? If somebody says, all right, put up your Dukes, we're going to go. Normally, you're going to drop your dominant side back, blade off, you know, maybe 30, 35 degrees or so. And then from there, you're going to get into fighting stance. Well, the Weaver stance with guns keeps you in that same fighting stance, and that's where you fight from. Then you have the isosceles stance, where you are squared off to your opponent, and you're really just all chest, all body pointed in towards the opponent. There's also the Chapman stance. I really don't know what the hell the Chapman stance is, because I have had probably 20 different people with really silly stances that I have dealt with, that I've, you know, tried to, you know, it's like, what is that? Let's get you squared away. Oh, this is the Chapman stance. Okay, show me the Chapman stance and explain it. I've had about 20 different people show me the Chapman stance and explain it to me. All 20 were different. So either none of them really knew what the Chapman stance was, or at least 19 of them didn't, or the Chapman stance is so vague that it's difficult to figure out. I really don't understand what the Chapman stance is all about. So I've kind of blown that off until Mr. or Mrs. Chapman, whoever it is who's developed this stance, can actually come to me and say, look, this is what it is and this is why. So until then, I've kind of eliminated that as one of the stances to deal with. Now, also, you have to keep in mind that when it comes to this whole stance thing, stance is basically for working on the range. You're not going to be in a stance while shooting. I need you to understand that. A lot of people say, oh, use the isosceles, it's more natural. There is nothing natural about shooting. Some people in the Weaver stance say, hey, you know what, this is a normal fighting stance, so stay with it. You know what, again, there is nothing normal about shooting a gun. You're controlling an explosion, you know, a foot or two away from your face. There's nothing natural about it. And you're following it up and doing it several times. So, all that having been laid out there. When it comes to shooting with just one hand, because your other hand, is either you don't have one or it's enable, you're unable to use it. If you can get that unusable hand up towards your chest, even if you can get it into the shoulder pocket, it's inside the deltoid above the clavicle, get it into your shoulder pocket while you're shooting with your good hand, that'll offer some support. You also generally are going to take and put that side forward, whatever side, if you're shooting with one hand, whatever side you're shooting with. If you're shooting with your left hand and left hand only, you're going to try to get your right hand up across your chest, and if possible, get your hand in your shoulder pocket. It might just be dangling off to the side, but it's best to get the thing up so it's not a distraction out of the way. If it's injured, get it above the heart if you possibly can to keep it from bleeding out so quickly. And you're going to put your, again, if you're shooting left-handed, put your left side forward. Your left foot, your left hand, you're going to be pointing in and shooting. Now, most people, when they shoot with just one hand, there is a slight cant. Everybody, just take a hand, hold it out in front of you, kind of a fist, with a basically a relaxed arm. You're going to notice that your hand is canted about 7 or 8, maybe 10 degrees. Okay? I'll tell you a little story that I read once upon a time. And this was back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that the Soviet shooting team was smacking around most of the other shooting teams around the world, including the American shooting team, and some of the different Olympic events. And the thing is, the Russians were allowing that natural cant, where the Americans and some of the other countries were making that pistol completely vertical. I mean, the sights were aligned perfectly. You know, it was you know, the way it should be. There was no cant. And it wasn't quite working for them so well, because you're twisting the muscles, using more muscles than are what's necessary. That cant is fine. Unless you're shooting at extreme distances, you're going to notice the bullet's going to drop always towards the ground. Okay? So your holdover is going to be always up above the ground. It's not going to be in line with the sights if you actually have a slight cant. So when I shoot one-handed, I have that slight, you know, 7, 8, 10 degree cant in my hand. And I have found that to work very well. Others would take this Olympic shooting stance and stand just, you know, with the support hand now, the hand that's not shooting, on the hip, and that elbow jettison out and stand exactly 90 degree, I guess it actually be 180 degrees, from the target where you're totally sideways to the target. That is not a defensive shooting stance. Please, get away from that. But the hand that has the gun in it, you're going to thrust that side of your body towards the target. You want to keep a little bit of a bend in the elbow. Keep it tight in the shoulder. If you can roll your shoulder back, I'm doing this as I'm talking, roll your shoulder back a little bit to kind of lock it in up into the upper torso. With that slight cant, then use your sights. That is what I have found to work for the vast majority of people that I have taught to shoot one-handed. All right, when we do this class in March, I don't know if we're going to have the students do much of the shooting when it comes to some of the stuff, but there is going to be some demonstrations of some other techniques that are available to you, and basically to get you to understand that 3 days on the range is not a be-all end-all. That's going to put you well on your way and get you to where you're going to be able to shoot better than 90 to 95% of the people who carry a gun for a living. In these 3 days, okay, you'll be able to outshoot almost every professional out there on the streets that carries a gun in the course of their duties. Okay, you'll be able to outshoot the vast majority of them and have a better understanding of keeping your gun running, not only with speed and accuracy, but also with keeping the gun up and running and your clearances, malfunction clearances, reloads, things such as that. You'll be dramatically better than the vast majority of the people who carry a gun during their duties of their job. Okay? Be it security, police, maybe an armed guard, something. You'll be dramatically better. But it's not a be-all end-all. Those of you who have studied martial arts or any other form of fighting, you generally realize, you get in, you start learning some stuff, and you realize the more you learn, the more there is to learn. Well, shooting is very similar to that. Eventually, you get to a crest where you realize, okay, now I realize, you know, I know how much there is to learn, or I have a good concept of how much there is to learn. And I realize now I'm at least halfway there, if not more. Now it's all refinement, you know, or different tactics. Because quite honestly, when it comes to marksmanship and gun handling, it doesn't really change. Tactics is where things change. Gun handling and marksmanship really don't change much at all. If you're shooting much, much further, you might add in a couple elements of marksmanship. Things like breath control or a neutral body position. If you really get up there, figuring out heart rate control. Some of those things, like if you're going to take a very, very long rifle shot. Those are some of the things that you'll learn in addition to the standard elements of shooting. So with all of that having been laid out, what we're talking about is being able to get good, reliable hits rapidly with multiple backup shots onto any number of targets, really, one up to three or four targets, bad guys that would be out on the street. So those are some of the things that you're going to learn, and we may very well go into some one-handed shooting, at least in demonstrations. There are some things where we would like to kind of add caveats to the techniques that we have. Okay, these are the techniques we're going to learn. We're out on the range doing it. Okay, just so you understand, those can transition well into this, this, and this. And we'll demonstrate those, but there's not going to be enough time in 3 days to teach all of that stuff. Kind of a little bit of a teaser so you will keep on with the training. Now, also realize that the group that's going to be out there training you, me, the other folks are going to be out there, the other professionals are going to be out there training you. When it comes down to some of these future courses that we're going to be doing, we're going to offer you some of the techniques that you can't find at most schools. The techniques are out there. They're really no secret, but they don't fit so well into a package deal of courses or a package deal of training in any particular one weapon system. So we're going to get rid of the package deal mentality, and we're actually going to get into some good, solid techniques that are very legitimate for using on the street. We're not going to teach you anything that doesn't have proven street credibility. We're not going to show you anything that is theoretical. We believe this should work because we've thought about it, and this is what our brains tell us should ought to work out. Everything that we're going to teach you has been used on the street and has saved the shooter's life. So those are the techniques you're going to learn. These are street-proven, street-credible techniques, and they all work together in a good system. So just understand that's what you're going to be looking at. Again, once we get the range secured, one of a couple different ranges, two or three ranges actually we're looking at, all that's going to be on 2aradio.com. And, of course, you can always feel free to email me, bill@2aradio.com. So stay tuned, guys. We're going to go into a story written that came out of a group that did research with Violence Policy Center and the NRA for, pro-gun and anti-gun laws. Stay tuned.
Can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, I just want to let you know, a guy that I know, he's a friend of mine, he owns a company called CombatTactical.com. CombatTactical.com, and I'm going to be working with John to put together a kind of a package deal for the different gear that you'll need for the 2A radio defensive handgun course. You need to have certain things like proper hearing protection, a good belt, holster, magazine pouches, things of that nature. So those are some of the things you're going to need. And John's probably got, 30,000-40,000 products at Combat Tactical. And he's had the site up and running, and he's doing really well. And it's very well laid out. I encourage everybody to look at CombatTactical.com and check out some of the stuff they've got. So I'm going to put down, when we get everything secured here, I'm going to put down the recommended types of gear to have, the right type of belt, the right type of holster, the right type of magazine pouch. Several of you are already going to have this gear. Several of you may have other stuff. And the thing is like, we really prefer like an injection molded Kydex type of holster. There are some out there that are $12. There are some out there that are $60. There's some out there that are $100. There's some out there like $25. We're going to recommend the best one for the best value. Not just trying to get you to spend a lot of money, certainly not in this economy. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of these holsters that are around the $25 mark that you would find out of places such as Uncle Mike's or 5-Eleven, those work out to be the best holsters. Where I used to work, we used to sell, we had some Uncle Mike's gear, and then we also had some from a couple other companies. We had the Serpa technology from Blackhawk, all kinds. And the prices were all over the place. I got to tell you, I had a big preference for the Uncle Mike's. The reason is that Uncle Mike's were a little bit less expensive because they used an injection molding process, which is a pretty inexpensive process to actually make the holsters. The problem was the molds cost about $30,000 to make at the time per gun. So if you were a big company like Uncle Mike's, Uncle Mike's Hoppies, they have several companies all wrapped up into one up in Oregon. If you could afford to lay out the cash to develop one of these molds, to make one of these molds, you could pour a whole bunch of holsters, and there's a lot less human time involved, and the holster making process goes a lot quicker. Plus, every holster is the same. If you use a process where you're literally wrapping around these guns, and you're using pressure and everything on heated up sheets of Kydex, it takes longer. There's a lot more effort involved, human hands involved, and those holsters will cost a lot more. So the injection molded holsters were great. Any company that is making those, you're looking at a very good product. Some of the Blackhawk holsters, I have some of those. One of the things I really like about the Blackhawk holsters is they're incredibly lightweight and they're very durable. I was shooting one this last weekend on Friday when I was out at the range shooting. I had a Blackhawk CQC holster. I did not have the SERPA retention button on it. I have some of those, but this is just a standard CQC holster. Excellent holster. I don't even remember the price of it, but it's a very good holster. Anyhow, we're going to recommend the right types of belts with the right size, the right type of magazine pouches, the right types of holsters. With the hearing protection, there's a lot of different hearing protection out there. You can get just the basic earmuffs, which are about $15 or $20. I really prefer the electronic hearing protection. That has an amplifier, and as soon as something gets above, I think it's 85 decibels, and a gunshot is well above that, they cut off for the instant of those gunshots. And it really allows you to communicate at a normal level and hear at a normal level, but all of the electronics shut off once you start shooting. It's fantastic technology. I've had sets of these for years. And there's several of them out there that are under $100. The set that I've got was $450. And that's a really high-end Comtac set of ear protection. And you can hook it up into a communications setup. It has a very natural sound to it through the electronics. But nobody needs to go out and spend that kind of money. $450 will get you a Glock or a Springfield XM. You can literally go buy a gun for $4.50. I had it because they're very durable, very industrial strength. I didn't want to have to go buy the $40 to $70 versions over and over and over again because mine were going to put up with years worth of abuse. So I got them. They work great. They still work. Matter of fact, I actually misplaced them. They're somewheres in all of my gear bags. I need to find them. I'm not exactly sure where they ended up. I was using them when I was shooting a demo shoot on video last August, and I have to find the bag that I was using then. Anyhow, so we'll have all of that gear together. I'm working with John at combattactical.com to have all of it ready so you can buy a package deal with, get everything that you need and sent off at one time. So check out John's site if you like it. It's really cool. He's a great guy. We may actually have him on the show sometime soon to talk a little bit about his site and the gear that's on there. Anyhow, stay tuned, guys. We're going to get to the story I spoke about earlier as soon as we come back from this next break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, I'm about to read you a story which comes from an organization known as the International News. Which, this report's coming out of Nashville. It says, U.S. states adopt looser gun laws. Now, hear ye. Okay. In many states across the U.S., it's getting easier to carry a gun, and many say it's the result of a campaign by the NRA to do so. The nationwide review by the Associated Press found that over the last 2 years, 24 states, mostly in the South and West, have passed 47 new laws loosening gun restrictions. Among other things, legislatures have allowed firearms to be carried in cars, made it illegal to ask job candidates whether they own a gun, and expanded agreements that make permits to carry handguns in one state valid in another. So reciprocity they're talking about. I always found that interesting, by the way, guys, as a caveat here, that some employers ask people that they're looking to hire if they own a gun. I wonder if they also ask them what religion they are. Do you practice a religion, and if so, what is it? Because that's protected in the First Amendment. It would almost be on the same line of asking them what political party they're affiliated with most closely. Do you exercise your Second Amendment right? I mean, what kind of question is that on a job application? Do you exercise your First Amendment right to practice freedom of religion? That's the sort of thing that just ticks me off. Okay, continue with the story. The trend is attributed in large part to a push by the NRA. The NRA, the leading gun owners lobby in the U.S., which for years has blocked attempts in Washington to tighten firearms laws, has ramped up its efforts at the state level to chip away at gun restrictions. This is all a coordinated approach to respect the human, God-given right of self-defense by law-abiding Americans, says Chris W. Cox, of the NRA's, who is the NRA's chief lobbyist. We'll rest when all 50 states allow and respect the right of law-abiding people to defend themselves from criminal attack. Tennessee and Montana, for example, have passed laws that exempt weapons made and owned in the state from federal restrictions. Tennessee is the home of Barrett Firearms Manufacturing, the maker of a 50 caliber shoulder-fired rifle the company says can shoot bullets up to 5 miles. We'll talk about that in a second here. The rifle is banned in California. There have been gun-friendly law changes in other states. Arizona, Florida, Louisiana, and Utah have made it illegal for businesses to bar their employees from storing guns in cars parked on company lots. Some states have made handgun permit information confidential, and others have allowed handgun permits to be issued to people who have had their felony convictions expunged or their full civil rights restored. Now, we're going to talk about this 5 mile thing. That would be if you hold the gun with just a nice, perfect level land at about a 45 degree angle. The maximum trajectory would take it about 5 miles. So it's not like you're going to be engaging targets out there. So it looks more like artillery fire if you're going to do that. Okay, continuing. The Associated Press compiled the data on new laws from groups ranging from Legal Community Against Violence, which advocates gun control, imagine that, to the NRA. Public attitudes towards gun control have shifted strongly over the past 50 years, according to Gallup polling. In 1959, 60% of respondents said they favored a ban on handguns except for, quote, police and other authorized persons, end quote. In Gallup's most recent annual crime survey, just this last October, found 71% oppose such a ban. So it went from 60% saying, yes, I would support that, to only 29% saying that, 71% saying, no, we'd oppose it. The NRA boasts that almost all states grant handgun permits to people with clean criminal and psychological records. In 1987, only 10 states did. The states that don't, Illinois and Wisconsin, as well as Washington, D.C., now prohibit carrying concealed handguns entirely. The NRA has a stranglehold on a lot of state legislatures, says Karen Rand, legislative director of the Violence Policy Center, a gun control group out of Washington. She continues by saying they basically have convinced lawmakers they can cost them their seats, even though there's no real evidence to back that up. Now, this will tell you how just ignorant, if not plain stupid, Kristen Rand of VPC is. When the Brady Law came into effect, I shouldn't say the Brady Law, the assault weapons ban, as they called it, when they were banning the sport utility rifles and limiting magazines to 10 rounds, back in 1992, a vast majority of the people who voted for that, that were up for re-election 2 months later, lost their seats. So, again, she says they basically convinced lawmakers they can cost them their seats, even though there's no real evidence to back that up. Yeah, there is. 1992, Kristen. Go back and read your history, you goofball. Tennessee's new laws came after the Republican takeover of the General Assembly this year, but most other states that loosened restrictions didn't experience major partisan shifts. Most of the states where the new laws were enacted have large rural populations where support for gun rights tends to cross party lines. We're actually seeing that a bit in the House of Representatives as well, because a lot of the people in the House are Democrats that are pro-gun because they represent rural areas where people are pro-gun. While some states have tightened gun laws during the same period, the list of new restrictive gun laws is much shorter than the ones that became much more liberal. In 2009 alone, more than three times as many laws were passed to make it easier on gun owners. New Jersey's 2000 law permitting people to one handgun purchase per month is the only noticeable of the more restrictive laws. Other examples this year include Maryland's ban on concealed weapons on public transit and Maine's vote to give public universities and colleges the power to regulate firearms on campus. The most contentious of Tennessee's new laws was one allowing handguns in bars and restaurants that served alcohol. It took effect in July after lawmakers overrode a veto by the governor. And then last month, a Nashville judge struck down the laws unconstitutionally vague, but supporters have vowed to pass it again. I love how judges will do that. Obviously, they're in supporting one form or another of a particular platform on a law, and they find a way to strike it down. That sort of thing happens in California all the time. It's almost like there's liberal judges for hire whenever they pass something like Proposition 187 years ago. Continuing, a similar Arizona law that took effect in September allows people with concealed weapons permits to bring their guns into bars and restaurants that have posted that haven't posted signs banning them. What that turns into then is it's like in Nevada, it turns into a trespassing issue. There's been many people who have told me. Now, I happen to know a little bit more about guns and the laws than the average bear. I've had people come to me, even residents of this state, and say, yeah, it's illegal to carry a gun in a casino. That's wrong. It is not illegal to carry a gun in a casino. You can't carry a gun in a casino. You can't carry a concealed handgun in a hotel casino. That's a load of BS. A number of the hotel casinos will post a sign that says no weapons allowed, which means don't bring a handgun in here. However, if they don't, no big deal. All it would be is a trespass issue. If you carry a gun into a casino that otherwise has it posted by the law of the state that says it's got to be posted this size, this conspicuous, blah, 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 and you ignore that and go in there, well, they can kick you out. And if you refuse to leave, then they can hold you for trespassing, and then the cops come and cite you for trespassing. And you may lose your CCW if that happens. But just so you understand, there is no law banning taking a gun into a hotel or casino in Nevada. It's up to every individual property. It's like any private business. So what we're talking about in this story, is that in Arizona, in Nevada, you can actually have your gun on you while drinking, as long as you don't get below 0.08, the same legal limit as driving. So you can pack and have a beer or two. You probably shouldn't have three or more. Okay? You can have a beer or two while you have your handgun on you. All right? So in Arizona, they passed a similar law, and a lot of different bars and restaurants started posting signs, you can't do that here. Well, you know what? Something tells me your guys' gross income is going to go down because the people that are going to pack are going to go to places where they can pack. All right, so continuing on with this. While Tennessee's law was in place, many bars chose not to let customers bring guns in. Likewise, more than 70 communities have opted out of allowing guns in parks in Tennessee. People go in there and start, they're talking about in the restaurants. People go in there and start drinking, and then they want to start a fight. What are they going to do if they've got a gun in their hand? Said Larry Speck, 69 years old, who works at an auto repair shop in Memphis. He says, I've got a gun permit, and I'm not carrying mine into a bar, even if they have the law. Okay, now that's got to be one of the dumbest statements I've heard in a long time. People go into a bar, they go in there and start drinking, and then want to start a fight. Okay. I'm not sure where to begin with this. People go into a bar and they start drinking, they want to start a fight. That would mean that essentially every bar that there is that has people in there partaking in the consumption of alcohol is a lawless area which just has a constant bar fight going on. Because say it takes you an hour and a half to get enough alcohol into you, maybe 2 hours, to want to start a fight. Well, by the time you walk in there, the people that showed up 2 hours before you are already fighting. And then by the time that fight breaks up in 10 or 15 minutes, the people that came in 10 or 15 minutes off of them, now they're fighting. So that's just stupid. And the idea is not for people to go in with the gun and start pounding away the booze, start a fight, and pull out a gun and shoot people. You just ignoramus. What a fool. It's that if you happen to be in a bar or a restaurant that serves alcohol, and someone goes ballistic, berserk, and is in the process of causing death or serious bodily injury, you're now able to protect yourself. Now, in Nevada, where you can have a gun on you and be in the process of drinking, we don't have problems in Nevada where legitimate CCW holders are in drinking and starting fights and gunning places down. There's no history to support this statement, Mr. Larry Speck, 69 years old. Perhaps old age has gotten into your brain and just corrupted it to the point of not being able to think legitimately, and now you just speak stupidly. I'm guessing. That's just where I'm sitting for my chair. Continuing, supporters of expanding handgun rights argue that people with state-issued permits are far less likely to commit crimes, and that more lawfully armed people cause a reduction in crime. Well, it's not just that supporters of handgun rights show that. The actual statistics agree with it. And then the last paragraph of this story. Opponents fear that more guns could lead to more crime. Academics are divided on the effect of liberalized handgun laws, and determining the impact is complicated by the move in several states to close handgun permit records. A violence policy center to steal away all of your gun rights and leave you completely defenseless project has, Mind News reports that find that more than 100 people have been killed by holders of handgun carry permits since 2007, including 9 law enforcement officers. The project originally intended to list all gun crimes by permit holders, but there were too many to keep track of, says Rand. They shoot each other over parking spaces, at football games, and family events, says Rand. The idea that you're making any place safer by injecting more guns is just completely contradicted by the facts. Now, of course, here's a guy who's lying through his filthy buck teeth to try to swing his anti-gun rhetoric. Now, yes, there have probably been over 100 people in the last 2007 through 2009. This story just came out, so there's really 3 years worth of data. So 33 people a year killed by CCW holders. You're right. Actually, quite a few more have been killed by CCW holders, and the vast majority are bad guys that are in the process of trying to commit murder or serious bodily injury upon the would-be victim, and they're done. And I have to tell you, of the 9 police officers killed by people holding CCWs, I tell you what would be really interesting for me, a supporter of gun rights, a CCW holder, and a former law enforcement officer, former Las Vegas Metro cop. I'd like to see all 9 of those reports because I wonder how many of those may have been in self-defense. Of those 9 law enforcement officers, how many of them may have been in self-defense from the people who were otherwise the would-be victims of a cop that might be out of control. The answer might be none. The answer might be nine. The answer might be somebody somewhere in the middle. I'd be interested to see all of them and find out. But, of course, you're going to have skewed facts on the side of the anti-gunners, especially this goofball out of VPC, the Violence Policy Center, to completely hose you out of any and all rights we possibly can if it includes a gun. I think that's their official name. This guy, Rand, whatever his first name is, I can't find it, is merely an idiot. The idea that you're making any place safer by injecting more guns is just completely contradictory by the facts. Okay, obviously you have no idea how to look at, interview, and interpret the answers of criminals who have said the thing we're most afraid of are citizens with guns. People in the general population that have a gun and they are armed, ready, willing, trained, and able to use it against attack. That's what we're afraid of because that makes our job tougher. Obviously, you've never heard that. I'm happy to share it with you. You should tune into 2A Radio right here, Goofball. Anyhow, more to come after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
As of Saturday, 47 police officers have died nationwide this year after being shot while on duty, which is up 24% from a total of 38 for the same time in 2008. 2008 was also the lowest number of gunfire deaths since 1956, according to the data. Over the past decade, small spikes in gunfire deaths have been common, but experts say they are surprised at the number of officers this year who have been specifically targeted and ambushed by gunmen. There's an increasingly desperate population out there, says Eugene O'Donnell, a professor of police studies at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. Other than in rare cases for ideological reasons, we really haven't seen people taking on the cops head to head. Something is amiss. It should be a cause for grave concern. I would agree. Multiple deaths happened in four attacks this year, contributing to this year's spike in cases. Our cases in which several officers were shot and killed in groups. The four officers last month outside Seattle, the four officers in Oakland, California in March, three officers in Pittsburgh in April, and two in Okaloosa County, Florida in April. In the November 30 shooting near Seattle, four Lakewood Police Department officers, all in uniform, were sitting around with their laptops at a coffee shop when shots rang out. Authorities say the gunman, Maurice Clemens, spared employees and other customers, and Clemens was later shot to death in a confrontation with another officer who was not harmed. Clemens had a violent erratic past in Washington State and Arkansas, and 6 days before the shooting, he had posted bail on charges of raping a child. In the April 4th shooting in Pittsburgh, Richard Popolowski has been accused by prosecutors of ambushing the three officers when they responded to a domestic violence call wearing a bulletproof vest and armed with a weapon including an AK-47. He started shooting almost immediately after they arrived, authorities said, and Popolowski has pled not guilty. Well, imagine that. I'm not guilty of killing people. What a goof. And it's interesting because there's actually been two ambush attacks in Pennsylvania this year, which has highly restrictive gun laws, very anti-gun. So, what we have to draw from this, folks, is the country is going downhill. The accountability is downhill. And it's going to be up to people like us to keep an eye out there on unstable people like them and keep them from going off and going on these shooting rampages by carrying, by packing, by keeping your head up, by staying in condition yellow, and recognizing any potential dangers that might be out there. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour coming up next, followed by the Ernest Hancock Show.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.